Hello, and welcome to another Exterior Career Podcast. On today's episode, I'm really excited to have Robin Story on the podcast. She is a very influential LinkedIn voice. She talks a lot about resumes and cover letters and things of that nature. She has nearly a million followers on LinkedIn. That is 25 times bigger than me. One day I hope to aspire to be as impactful and impressive as Robin. We dig deep in here into resumes, into how to write resumes, how the resume space has changed, just how little amount of time resumes are actually looked at, and some ways to get your resume seen by real humans. So listen to this episode with Robin and I. We talk a lot of shop about resumes, a little bit about cover letters and how insignificant cover letters are, and really share lots of tips and insights about how to make your resume stand out in a sea of lots of competition. But before we head into this episode, let me just remind you that there are two primary ways that we help you at Kadima Careers. I created Kadima Careers to be the world's best career accelerator. And by that, we mean that we get you more interviews, more offers, and more money. And we have two primary programs that help with that. One is our personalized coaching program, where you get matched with a world-class coach, and we guarantee to work with you until you get a better job. We help you get that job. We help you negotiate for that better offer. And then we help you in those first 90 days. We give you direct personalized support. You get access to me. There's also group coaching. If you need a little less access to me, you don't need a dedicated personalized coach, but we do support you with our community, with our masterclasses, with our insights, with our growth framework, which will get you more interviews, will get you more offers, and will convert those offers to more money. So if you're interested in accelerating your career and owning your career, just go to kadimacareers.com, K-A-D-I-M-A, careers.com. Check that out. And the last three words I'll leave you with are own your career. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Steer Your Career podcast. On today's episode, we have a very special guest, Robin Story, who has nearly 1 million followers on LinkedIn. Used to have over a million, but still pretty damn close to a million. And she is one of the world's expert resume writers and resume experts. I met Robin on LinkedIn. I saw her amazing work there, commented, we started interacting, and alas, she is here now on the Steer Your Career podcast. And with that, I'd like to introduce Robin to the audience here. Robin, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate that. I'm the CEO of Storyline Resumes. We have been in business now for about 24 years. We have a team of 70 staff, interviewers, and executive resume writers, and we work with clients from all over the world to help them tell their best professional stories.
Awesome. And you have shaped over like hundreds of thousands of resumes over the course of your career. And something that I saw in your LinkedIn profile, which is probably one of the most impressive things, is you've received 336 recommendations on LinkedIn, which is a crazy number. And probably most of those recommendations are about, would you imagine, your resume services?
Yeah, absolutely. We've not done really a great job of asking people to leave us recommendations. We're always so busy here. We work with about 200 new customers a week, sometimes 250 new customers a week. And, you know, we just want people to have the tools that they need to conduct an effective job search. We're not really great at the self-promotion part of it, which we probably need to get a little better at. We've got lots and lots of former customers. We've lost count. It's somewhere, I think, around 300,000 over the years.
Wow. I think you're downplaying it, because 336 recommendations where someone had to proactively go in there, put their name attached to it, is quite impressive. I usually tell our job seekers to aim for like between 3 and 7. And you have 336. I know it's a different space that you work in here, but without even trying on the marketing side, you obviously have a lot of fans out there.
I'd like to think so. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. So I'd love to hear, Robin, like, you've been working in the space for 24 years in the resume space. What was your background prior to forming Storyline Resumes?
Yeah, I started off working in marketing. I have a degree in communications from St. Vincent here in Pennsylvania. I started off working in marketing, flip-flopped into a human resources role, And I always joke that I'm sort of accidentally successful. I started Storyline Resumes because I had one child and one on the way, and I just wanted to put them on and off the school bus, you know, when the time came. So I said to my husband, I think that I can make a business out of doing a little HR consulting and helping people with their resumes. And my husband, ever the gamer, said, I'll tell you what, you can quit your corporate job if you make enough money to pay for the groceries. So I quit my corporate role and I became a waitress. And so when he was at work during the day, I was home with the kids, I was building the business. And when he came home in the evening, a couple of nights a week, I went and waited tables. So that was 20 some years ago. Now, of course, I buy all the groceries, but it's incredibly important when you're in an entrepreneurial situation, number one, that you have the right kind of support. And number two, that you're really willing to do everything and anything to grow that business. So the first years were very quiet and sort of lean, and then got a little busier, added on our first writer. And then here we are all these years later, we employ 70 people. And it's been such a fun and amazing journey. I always say that it's like Christmas every day here at Storyline. You never know who's going to be on the other end of the line when you pick up the phone.
And when you made this career path, you were just having children. And now one of those children actually worked for you, right?
My daughter, yes, Alexa, she actually runs the day-to-day operations of Storyline Resumes. Yep, she's an adult. She has a degree in literature, started off as a book editor, worked and lived in New York City, and now she lives at the beach in New Jersey, and she runs the day-to-day of Storyline.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So before doing the resumes, you worked in a couple different HR roles, and I think it was at Avaya and Dish Network.
Yeah.
And HR encapsulates a lot of different areas of the business. It could be like HR business partners. It could be recruiting and talent acquisition. It could be employee relations. It could be like leadership and development. Did you focus more on the recruiting side in that HR space?
I was involved in employee relations. So I looked at a lot of resumes. We hired a lot of engineers, a lot of salespeople. And I remember someone coming to me. He knew my husband. He was a friend of my husband, and he was an engineer. And he said, Robin, can you help me create a resume that you would want to see when you're hiring? And I thought, that's a really good approach. And so that's what we did. And in no time at all, he was interviewing and had a job. And then so he sent a friend and then another friend and then another friend. And that's how it steamrolled. And I thought, you know what? I think that I can develop or innovate a resume that feels more like a story than it feels like a resume. And that's really been our philosophy all along, to create these very genuine stories steeped in accomplishment and impact instead of your job description, which is what so many resumes actually feel like. I have a book coming out next month. And a couple of weeks ago, I did a little promotion on LinkedIn and I said, hey, go pre-order the book and then send us your resume. We'll do a little mini review for you. So people did, 400 of them did. So we've been working for weeks to get through these mini reviews. And I'm finding that even in this day and age, with all of the information and the resources, people are still using a very antiquated way of developing their resumes, which focuses primarily on describing their job. And in fact, in this market, which is highly competitive, really any market, you've got to be telling a good story. I don't care about what your duties are. If I'm hiring for that role, I already know what those duties are. I need to know about you. What makes you special? What makes you different? Tell me a story about something that you've done where you've turned things around, you inherited something that was a mess and you really created a great team, or you drove revenue, you saved money. We're looking for things that have meaning. And that's where most people are missing the boat when they're telling their professional stories.
So you've been in this space for 24 years. What stayed the same over those 24 years? And then we'll talk about what's changed over the last quarter century.
I think the thing that has stayed the same is that people want the same things. They want a job where they're treated fairly, where they are paid well, where they feel part of a community, where there's mutual respect between themselves, their peers, and their leaders. And then the things that have changed has been, how do I get a job in this market or any market? And there's so much technology, there's so much ATS. Now we're throwing AI into the mix. Hiring has become much more impersonal than it used to be. And afraid that we're on a path that people who are in charge of hiring have lost the ability to make hiring decisions. And that's a problem right now and moving forward. And we need to be able to recapture our ability to feel empowered to make a decision by having a conversation with humans and stop relying so much on the AI tools, because they're just not as effective as a human instinct would be.
How would you say it changed? So like when I try to get my job, and I guess what sort of companies are you seeing things change at as well? Because I've always seen it to be very hard to get a resume seen by a human, whether it's blocked by ATS, whether it's blocked by AI and algorithms, whether it's blocked by just lazy recruiters not like digging into the pile. What has changed? That is it any harder really to get a resume in front of humans now than it was when you started? I guess some of the changes that I've seen is when I was applying for jobs back in 2000, I was mailing in applications sometimes, sure. Faxing in applications. I don't know if anyone knows what a fax machine is, but
nobody
I think in
2000. Does that anymore. No faxing, no mailing. Back in the day, of course, when I was a kid, even you had your resume printed out on ivory paper with
that. I did that
people
too.
They don't even know that sort of thing existed. Yeah, I think it's definitely a combination of things. I think it's more difficult to get your resume seen because it's very easy to click and apply. So I think that a lot of recruiters that are tasked with sorting and vetting candidates are extremely overwhelmed with the number of candidates that they're getting. So I think there needs to be a new strategy around vetting questions instead of encouraging people just to apply. ATS only does so many things. ATS identifies certain qualifications that are set by a recruiter or hiring manager, and that if you pass through those requirements, then you're getting to a human. But no human, no matter how good you are at your job, can look through 700 or 800 or 1,000 resumes that have been deemed quality, right? So that's the first thing. I think that the companies need to do a better job of picking relevant vetting questions of maybe what their 5 or 10 key requirements for a position are. And those requirements really need to be written by hiring managers or people that understand what that candidate needs to have, the experience that they have, the qualifications, or even personality traits or successes previously, things that they really need to have. And instead of encouraging everyone to apply, again, like the quick apply, the easy apply, we're clicking our applications all over the place, and we're not necessarily even sure that we're qualified for that job. That muddies the waters. So I think that we sort of need to go back to the beginning, figure out what are the vetting questions, what are the 8-10 key components the person needs to do this job, and then ask them those questions. Here's the rub. Once you've answered those questions and you've answered all 10 that yes, you have that, now I'm going to let you go in and fill out the application. That's not happening right now. Everybody is filling out an application. So we're all in information overload, getting so many applicants that maybe really aren't relevant to the job. And now it takes me 2 times, 3 times, 10 times longer to get to the people that I really want to have a conversation with, right? I'm talking at it from the hiring manager, the recruiter's perspective. So we need to kind of whittle it down. That's the first thing. The second thing is that an economy like ours, we went through some really scary layoffs at the start of the pandemic. Then we did a lot of rehiring back because, hey, nothing really happened. So we've got a lot of people. Now we're going through a downturn and you see companies laying off last year. You can find a recruiter to save your life because lots of recruiters are being laid off. Companies feel like, hey, we're not hiring, so we don't really need all these recruiters. And I don't know if they're not thinking of natural attrition or people leaving jobs or growth spurts in the market. But you absolutely need people that can hire. And I think that by replacing recruiters with a lot of AI tools, what we've done is we've eliminated people's ability to rely on their own instinct to interview, have a conversation with someone, and make a determination as to whether or not they can do that job. That is where we are right now. So we've got the perfect storm. We've got a lot of people who are laid off. We've got a lot of people applying to a lot of jobs. We've got this fake job market that we're finding out. We've got lots of jobs that are posted that don't really exist. And so we are now at this sort of apex of, holy shit, what's happening in the market? Why is it that I've always been employed and I've had a resume that has performed really well? Now I can't get an interview. So there's a lot of variables out there that we need to break down and figure out, how am I now as a candidate going to get in front of people? And we make all kinds of suggestions for those. But it feels like a job search, which really should be an enjoyable and exciting experience for most candidates, is turning into a bit of an uphill battle.
These fake jobs that you're talking about and like roles that aren't being hired for, I've heard lots of talk about this. I've never seen it myself from inside the walls. Occasionally, we've had roles posted, which we called evergreen roles, that we just always wanted to keep hot candidates for. But there was a purpose for that because we're always hiring technical account managers or software engineers or salespeople. So you just always want to keep that pipeline open. And we were actually considering the talent that came in, even though we didn't necessarily have the role open right then. If we found someone good, we'd keep them in our short list. Like I do see some shady practices occur on LinkedIn. I get asked for some jobs that are pretty clear that they're trying to like ask my social security number or something like that.
Right.
Never give your social security number out to anybody that ever asked for it that you don't know. Where are you seeing these fake jobs occurring?
The New York Post did a great article. I've been saying it for about a year and a half now. That we work with a lot of clients. We talk with a lot of clients. Plus, I've become a repository for job search horror stories on LinkedIn because many people follow my posts and they tell me their stories. And what people are seeing are the same jobs posted over and over. And I'm actually hearing from folks that are going to interview for these positions. They come to the end of the process. No one gets the job. And a month later, they're reposted again. So the New York Post did a pretty great article a couple of months ago where they had some inside information. And people can go and find that information online where they were talking with recruiters. They were talking with internal folks. And they were saying, yes, we've been told, hey, listen, post these jobs. We've got stakeholders. We've got shareholders. We've got customers. The jobs numbers need to be propped up. We need to be showing that we're hiring, that this is where a lot of that stuff is coming from. So if I'm a consumer and I go to a website and I see, wow, they're really growing. Look at all these positions they're hiring for. The problem is that they may not really be hiring for all of them. So you've got lots of candidates thinking they have a shot, filling out very lengthy applications, submitting resumes, providing personal details, yada, yada, yada. Those jobs don't really exist. So there are little landmines in the job search that didn't exist previously. And I tell people just to be cautious. So if you love a company, and a lot of times we recommend, hey, make a list of 50, 60, 100 companies. And if you like a company, if jobs, they're the same jobs that are posted over and over that don't ever seem to get filled, approach those with a grain of salt. Because there's a reason why you're seeing them over and over without ever getting filled, or without those postings ever coming.
You were talking about how the companies should change their process, maybe to ask some questions first before the application comes in to help like weed out some, not riffraff, but just like serious people in the process. Sure. To cull down the resumes. It's not necessarily in the company's best interest to do that unless it expedites their process. So a lot of the changes that you're suggesting that companies do make lots of sense. The candidate experience sucks. I see like your posts all the time. I'm usually in violent agreement that this stuff sucks.
Yes.
And that companies ghost candidates and they don't treat the candidates well. They don't even look at the resume. What gives you confidence that things will change in the recruiting space to make it?
Well, I'm confident that things are going to change in the recruiting space because number one, a lot of people need jobs. Number two, companies have a lot of positions to fill. So as the economy gets back on track, we're in election year. Things are always a little bit up in the air in the U.S. in an election year. The stock market is doing well. The economy seems to be doing well. There is a little bit of concern around people's credit card debt. You know, if you pay attention to the news, you'll see things that consumer spending is pretty good. People are feeling confident about their futures. But right now, we've got a little bit of blip in the economy. People are being a little bit more cautious about the money that they spend. Companies are trying to sort of get talent, not paying as much for them as maybe they have previously. We're in a little bit of a balance here. So if companies really want to bring people on and they're finding out, and hopefully a lot more of them are finding out, it is a very expensive prospect to vet, to interview, to hire people that either don't work out or that take a very long time to get in the door. So for the sole purpose of saving money, shorter resume cycles save companies money. It's less labor intensive. It's much more cost effective. So as companies are looking for ways to save money, right now they're shedding some staff. Maybe they're shedding services that they don't use. They're going to continue to be looking internally to see where else can we save money. And the recruiting function is definitely a money pit. So as a matter of cost savings, I foresee over the next 6 months that organizations, they're going to take a look at this and say, hey, we're spending a lot of money here and we're not getting a lot of bang for our buck. So it's going to have to become more cost efficient, just like everything else. And I think that money is always, almost always the greatest motivator. So that's where I'm seeing changes. I also get really lovely notes from people that follow me, they hear my stories and they make changes in their own organization. Just a couple of months ago, I got a message from a woman who is a global head of human resources for a pharmaceutical company. And she said, I've been following you forever. And she goes, and I went into our morning meeting with our recruiting staff. They were meeting that morning about college recruits and intern recruits. And she said, do you guys follow Robin? And some people were like, yeah. And she read my post and she said, do we really need to have writing samples for interns? Do we really need to have a four interview process for entry level? I'm going to task you. I'm going to challenge you to create a process where we hire interns and entry level candidates in 2 weeks in one interview. And that's what they did. And she said, now I'm going to be working that up the food chain into our more mid-level roles. We're going to have a 2-interview process. Into our executive level interviews, we're going to have a 2-3 interview process. Do we really need to talk with someone 7 or 8 times before we make them an offer? And that wasn't the only example, but that's a great one. People are beginning to question their own ability. And do we really need to, at an executive level, have 10 interviews with someone before we make them an offer? If they had ascended to an executive level in their career, they're probably pretty qualified. Let's focus on things that matter to us. Maybe it's a leadership characteristic. Maybe it's a personality characteristic. Maybe it's a knowledge of a certain market and focus our efforts there. That's going to have to happen because unless you really need a job, job seekers are less likely to look for a position because they too are hearing the horror stories. They've been a part of that scenario and they don't really want that anymore.
So if these companies do expedite the interview process, which you're saying there's a couple of trendsetters that are starting to do that, then it's even more important to get in front of the recruiter or the person to look at your resume. And if they're reducing the amount of essays that need to be done beforehand, it's going to increase the number of applications because it's going to be easier for people to apply. And how do people differentiate themselves if the applications go up? It's already hard to differentiate yourself to get on the radar of a real human being. How do people differentiate themselves now in that pile of resume? And then what will be needed as the pile will increase?
So I have always been a huge proponent of being your own advocate, right? When you think about your resume, it is the one thing that you have, the narrative that you control, that is going to influence whether or not someone is going to pick up the phone and call you for an interview. So when I'm looking at a resume, it's 2 pages. Most of the resumes we create here are 2 pages because we work with a little more experienced and more senior level people. This is, to me, is very valuable real estate. Everything that I have on this resume needs to do 2 things, right? It needs to tell a story and it needs to garner some sort of an influence. So instead of using that resume to describe things that a recruiter should already know about you or your history or your job, instead use it to describe your impact. How can you measure your success? What sort of innovation, leadership, transformation, problem solving, growth have you personally been responsible for? Everyone has accomplishments. They need sometimes help identifying what those accomplishments are. So ask yourself these questions. In my job, what are the KPIs that I have to meet, the key performance indicators? What is showing up every year on my annual review? What am I being graded on? What am I known for at work? So, you know, if you're someone who works in purchasing and every single time your chief financial officer looks at a purchase and comes to you and says, hey, Joe, we spent X amount of dollars on this particular ingredient or resource or whatever, we need to save 50 grand, have at it. That means that Joe is the guy that is always looking for new vendors, who is always negotiating costs and is always acknowledging cost savings for the organization. That's what you're known for. Those are the kinds of things that show up on your resume. You don't need to tell me about your job description as a director of purchasing. If I'm hiring a director of purchasing, I already know what you do. I need to know that 7 times last year, you renegotiated vendor contracts and you saved an accumulated total of $1.5 million. That's what needs to be on your resume.
So those bullets that communicate and demonstrate impact that you were responsible for and delivered, and ideally quantifying it as well.
Absolutely.
How much does that stand out, though, if everybody has bullets that quantify their impact? Because I've always found that the biggest differentiators on resumes are companies that people have worked at before, years of experience, schools that they attended, depending on how far out that they are. Right. People do look at the schools that people attended, titles that people held. trajectory of like up the chain, and also those impact bullets. In my case, when I've looked at probably 10,000 resumes in my career looking to hire people, I do a quick scan. I look at companies, titles, depending on the years out, school. Then I'll look after that to make sure that there's some numbers in there that they're delivering impact.
The titles, I think, is absolutely the most critical, along with career trajectory, because the first thing I'm going to do when I'm looking at your resume is scan down through those titles. I need to make sure that your summary statement, whatever you're claiming on your resume, aligns with your actual experience. That's where a lot of people miss the mark. A lot of times we're talking people out of doing general resumes. This is not a market for general resumes. Back in the day, 5 years ago, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, recruiters and hiring managers would look at a resume and they'd say, okay, I think this person has the potential to do this, or they've got some great skill set or some experience that we can work with. People aren't doing that so much anymore. There's not time. There's an urgency to fill. There's too many candidates. So you've got to be very specific in your resume. So if you want to be in sales, across the top of your resume, you need to say seasoned sales professional or seasoned business development professional, whatever it is that you're calling yourself or whatever it is that the job is that you're going after. Clarify it, have the focus, and then the details that follow. Everything in your resume then needs to align to that goal, because no one's going to figure out where you belong. You have to tell them. That's the first thing. The second thing is, a lot of people in this country work for small and medium-sized businesses. So I think it is incredibly important, if you work for a medium-sized business that maybe someone doesn't know about, take a line, do a little blurb about that company. They are a manufacturer of electronic components. They make $12 million a year, and they serve, you know, the automotive, the tier one, or the industrial manufacturing segment, whatever. Just put something in there that lets people know at a glance who they are, and then get into your details. Obviously, if you work for Google or Amazon or Microsoft or NASA or whoever, you don't need to do a descriptor because everybody knows who those companies are. But if I'm getting a resume in and you're like starting to hit me with all of this description and a handful of accomplishments, but I've got no context in which to judge you, it doesn't feel genuine to me. I can't relate to you. But if I know it's a $12 million company when you got there and you were the VP of sales and you grew up to $24 million, that tells me something about you. So you need to really be looking at everything on that resume with an eye that says, what does this tell me about you? And that's what we do here. We're looking at everything and saying, does this bring value? Is there an impact? Tell me this story. Give me the end result. You know, then I can see whether or not this person is a dynamo, whether or not I can see this person is a, I love a shit show story, I always say. Something was a mess. I came in and I turned it around. So those are the kinds of things that you want to be focusing on. And you've got to do that if you want to stand apart, because, you know, a lot of other people are doing the same things. Get the application in and then move to the next phase. Now do the networking piece. Get on LinkedIn. Who do I know at that company? Do I know somebody that knows somebody at that company? If you are referred in for a job, you are 46% more likely to get called for an interview than someone who sets a blind resume. I cannot stress the power of networking.
Totally agreed. Any tips on how to build those relationships? So if you are applying for a company, let's say Visa, you're applying for a job as a customer success representative at Visa, and you got your resume in and you might have had some experience doing customer success for a small manufacturing company.
Yeah. So you're going to go to LinkedIn. You're going to look at that company. Once you get on that company page, you're going to click employees who work here. And then you're going to scroll down through there. Who is someone in a leadership capacity? Who is someone in an executive human resources capacity? You're going to click their name. LinkedIn will actually tell you how you're connected to this person. So if you have a first degree connection, who is connected to this person that can make an introduction, or a second degree connection that can make this introduction, you want to ask people for it. You've got to make it really easy for people to help you. There's a running joke where, you know, when you're looking for a job and you reach out to your friends and family network, you reach out to your peers, your old bosses, your old coworkers, your old customers, and you say, hey, I've been laid off. Can you let me know if anything comes up at your company? That's okay for a first approach. But when you keep doing that, you're starting to find that people aren't returning your phone calls. They're no longer responding to your emails. You know why? Because nobody wants to look for a job for you. What they are willing to do is give you a minute of their time. They are willing to make an introduction. They are willing to point out someone in their organization that does the hiring. But no one wants to spend time looking for a job for you, no matter how much they like you or how great you worked together in the past. People have a real misunderstanding of what networking is. And so when you're networking, you want to make sure that you're not sending emails to a recruiter that you see or someone on LinkedIn and saying, hey, can you tell me about this job? Now you're putting the onus on them, or you're reaching out to a hiring manager. How many other messages do you think they got? When you're asking for something, make it quick, make it specific, and personalize it. And you're much more likely to get a response. But when you're just sending out emails saying, hey, I applied for this position, can you tell me about it? Or can you look at my profile and tell me if you think I'm a fit? Nobody has time to look at your profile and tell you're a fit. You're asking too much. Make the ask really quick and really easy for best responses.
I think that's so critical, getting those referrals. I think you said increases the likelihood of getting your resume looked at. I think you said 46%. So when you work with your clients, how much of your effort spent on the resume? How much is spent on building those relationships?
So for us, because we are service, we create packages. So our packages are anything from resume, LinkedIn profile, cover letter, biography. We also offer coaching packages. Coaching is such an important piece of what we do, and it's something fairly new to us in the past couple of years, because we get a lot of clients, they have their resume, they're sending it out, they're getting an interview, but they can't get across the finish line. So they need to talk with a coach about interviewing and how it is to close the deal. A lot of people have trouble closing the deal. They're always the runner up. They're always the bridesmaid, never the bride, right? I always say. But it's good for a company to kind of offer that sort of support. We don't do any placement. We're not recruiters. We don't find you a job, but we do provide a lot of resources and tools. So every resume package that we wrap up, we say, okay, here's a list of all the best websites. Here's how to network. Here's how to find this or how to find that. Here's how to use your documents. Here's the difference between your PDF and your applicant tracking system version resume. So we kind of spell everything out. So when our clients leave us, they have every tool they need to get out there and apply. Apply, apply, apply. Job search today is a numbers game. So you have to have the right tools and you have to be sending out a lot of resumes. And that's the tea.
Yep. Do you have any rule of thumb of how many resumes people should expect to send out, or what sort of response rate they should expect to get from their resumes?
Yeah, the average response rate for resumes that are sent out to a job are 7%. So if you send out 100 resumes, you should get about 7 responses. When you have your resume professionally done, that creeps up to 12, 15, sometimes 20%. But the key is here, you have to send out a lot of resumes. So we used to recommend 25 a week. Now we're saying somewhere between 40 and 50, because about 50% of the jobs that you're applying for are not really real, don't exist, have already been filled or are being filled internally. So we tell people to not get discouraged. If you get a really quick response, hey, we're not moving forward with you, and it's like within minutes, that really has nothing to do with you. It means this job is closed, but the posting is still up, or it means that the job has already been filled. So don't feel bad about getting immediate declinations. That's just part of the process. So the more resumes you send out, the more interviews you get, the more likely you are to get an offer. I did a post a couple of weeks ago I thought was pretty telling. In 1994, the average job search took 5 weeks. In 2024, the average job search takes 5 months. In 1994, there was another thing, and then another thing, and then and the average tenure between 1994 and a job, 4 years, 2024. People have not really changed that much, but the number of interviews went from 1 to 2. The average now is 6. The number of people involved in the hiring process used to be 1 or 2. Now it's 10. So hiring has gotten more complicated, but the outcomes have pretty much remained the same. That is a very telling statistic.
Interesting. So you have a wealth of knowledge here. And one thing that you alluded to earlier is something that I believe in too. Generally, keep your resume 2 pages max, ideally 1 page. But I would love just for you to share some common tips and tricks for resumes of like mistakes you see people do, or some tips that you have for people to implement.
I think like the most common thing is you don't need to put your home address on your resume anymore, just your city and state where you're located in. A lot of the resumes that we create right now include 3 very specific things at the top. They include the kind of position that you're going after, whether or not your situation is work from home, hybrid, or on site. And then the other thing that we like to talk in our summary is a little bit about what it is you bring to the party, right? You're an award-winning sales rep, you are an experienced chief financial officer with 20 years experience, whatever. So you want to make it really clear, really quick, who you are, what you want, what you're after, the job you're after, and a little bit about why. And then the other thing is, I think we innovated this 20 some years ago, on almost all of the resumes that we create, we include little snippets, and they could be a little bit of snippets from your performance review, like what I call third-party feedback, something nice someone said about you. Whether or not you got a great note from a customer, maybe a peer that you coached or mentored, if you're a leader, some sort of feedback that you got on a leadership survey. I love those kinds of things because resumes can feel super impersonal. And if you create that vibe where it feels really genuine, I think that recruiters and hiring managers really relate to people more in that way. So the more you can humanize yourself in your approach, the better off you are. And then the third thing, of course, is the dead horse that I beat over the head all the time. And that is make your resume really about your impact. It's okay to tell a story. It's okay to get a little bit longer in the development of that story. But if you went to a company and you were responsible for really helping them turn around a function, their sales function, their accounting function, their purchasing, their operations, whatever, that is a story that needs to be told. I don't care that you created appointments with clients and talked about your products, right? I care that you landed the biggest deal in the company's history. Make sure that whatever is in that resume means something to you and means something to other people. Because it, again, it's the one thing that you have to make that impression.
And the other thing, I know you do help people with cover letters too. Let's just wrap up this conversation with cover letters. What's your thought on the use of cover letters, how impactful they are? If they're optionally required, should people submit them? Just love your perspective.
I think cover letters are highly overrated. We include cover letters in our packages as more of a check the box exercise. If you're applying for a position and the company is requiring that you submit the cover letter, go ahead, put the name on the position, whatever, and submit a general cover letter. I think folks are giving job seekers advice to customize their cover letter, to customize their resume for every job they apply for, haven't really applied for a job. It is a time-consuming and sometimes very difficult and lengthy task to customize everything. If you have a good resume and you are telling your professional story, you're going to cover the bases organically. This changing, adding keywords, taking keywords away, it is all very frustrating for job seekers. You end up with 72 different versions of your resume. And I think it just really increases the level of frustration to have a really well-written resume, have a really well-written cover letter, and use them as much as possible. And eventually, you're going to hit something that is a fit for you. And if I can include one other takeaway, I think it is, there's definitely a lack of courtesy on the part of the job seeker and on the part of the potential employer. Everybody talks about it, lots of ghosting, nobody follows up, you've been on interviews, you can't get a response, yada, yada. But I'm also seeing on this part of the job seeker too, people are out there spraying and spraying, right? They're applying to everything and everything, hoping something sticks. Don't do that. First of all, it just makes it a convoluted mess for everyone. Make sure that whatever you're applying for, you feel qualified to do, you have the qualifications that they're looking for. And that really cleans up a lot of the muck and mess that is the modern day job search. So really, let's expect a level of professionalism and a respect both from the job seeker and the company. And once we start feeling that way and behaving that way, I think that you're going to see job seeking normalizing. You're going to see the hiring process normalizing and not being so long. For me, it's really all about telling a great story, but also being very genuine in what we feel qualified to do.
I hope your wish comes to fruition.
Me too.
You get more respect and appreciation for the candidate experience from the company side, and from the candidate side, more appreciation and respect also for the recruiter side, because the job of a recruiter is a tough job. The job of a hiring manager, it's not their sole job to hire. They have other tasks to do. So you're often dealing with people that may have conflicting incentives.
Agreed.
And also lack of experience in the space on both sides.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome, Robin. This was a great conversation. The last two questions I want to ask you is if you can leave our audience with one more last piece of great sick career advice. Love to hear what your one last parting tip would be.
Yeah, I think that the best advice that I have for job seekers is you have to be your own advocate. You have to believe in yourself. And that starts with a lot of self-reflection. Who are you? what is it that you have brought to your employers? What do you have a passion for? It is okay to sit with pen and paper and write those things down or type those things up and let those things shine through on your resume, because what makes you incredible as a person also makes you incredible as an employee. So figure out who that is and what those things are.
Awesome. And then last question for you, Robin, how can people find you?
Find me on LinkedIn under Robin Story, RobynStorey. And they can also find me on our website, www.story with an E, storylineresumes.com. My last name is Story. So storyline resumes.com.
Awesome name, awesome website. And thank you so much for the great advice. Thank you for all you do on LinkedIn. I'm always learning something. Always appreciate your posts each day. And thank you for joining us here on the Steer Your Career podcast, Robin.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you and I appreciate your engagement as well.
Thank you.